oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Check engine, ABS, or maintenance light on? Take the guesswork out of your warning lights with O'Reilly Veriscan. The service is free and provides a report with solutions verified by ASE-certified master technicians. And if you need help, we could recommend a shop for you. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Lowe's knows that saving is always top of mind, especially this season. That's why we've picked some great deals for early Black Friday. Get free select DeWalt, Kobalt, or Craftsman tools when you buy a select battery or combo kit. More tools? Why not? Plus, we've got select pre-lit artificial Christmas trees starting at $59.98 because it's never too early to think Christmas. Get Black Friday prices without the crowds. Lowe's, we help. You save. While supplies last, selection varies by location. At Lowe's, this Veterans Day and every day, verified military members, veterans, and their spouses get automatic silver status in MyLowe's Rewards with free standard shipping, plus 10% off eligible purchases with no annual limit. It's one way we honor and give back to those who have served and still do. Learn more now at Lowe's.com/military. 10% discount can't be combined with another offer. Exclusions, terms, and conditions apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.
You're listening to live courtroom coverage of the trial of Karen Reed from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. Now, back to the courtroom.
When you decided to leave that night, did you say around 1:45-ish?
Yes.
Okay. When you left around 1:45, was there any events that happened that night that would cause you unrest or excitement or your heartbeat to raise?
No.
When you decided to leave, you and your husband, where were you going to go?
We were dropping off Julie Nagel and Sarah Levinson, and then we were going home.
Had you planned on dropping them off earlier in the night?
No. When we got there, Julie's brother had pulled up to pick them up, and
I won't ask you what was said because you weren't there.
Oh, okay.
At some point, did you come to an understanding that you would give them a ride home?
Yes.
Did you offer?
Yes.
Who was going to drive home between you and your husband?
Matt drove home.
When you left, I want you to describe as you step out into the driveway or the walkway. Was it the front door or side door, if you remember?
I walked out the front door.
Is the weather like it was when you first got there?
No, it's picked up.
Tell us what you mean by it's picked up.
So as I walk out, you kind of go, the walkway is to the left. So I walk down the steps, I go to the left. The snow was coming, it was cold, the wind was picking up. So I kind of just like curled up and ran to my car quick to get in.
What part of the car did you get into?
I, front passenger.
Who was driving?
Matt.
And where were the other two people?
Sarah and Julie were in the back seat.
Who was in what spot?
I'm not exactly sure.
So both of the young women were in the back seat?
Yes.
Was there any conversation when you got into the car?
We got in the car and they were teasing me.
Why were they teasing you?
Because I had like bread and maybe peanut butter in my car.
Why did you have bread and peanut butter in your car?
I had my niece for the week, and I was dragging her like to all my kids' sporting events. So we'd go from like one game to another game to a practice. So sometimes instead of always giving her McDonald's or Dunkin' Donuts, I'd try to throw her a peanut butter sandwich.
And they were making fun of you?
Yeah.
As the car backs out of the driveway, tell us what you're doing.
I'm talking to the girls.
You just moved your head.
Yes.
Does that mean anything?
Yes.
Tell us.
They were both sitting behind me, so I was like turning and, you know, chatting and talking.
After your husband pulls out of the driveway, do you start to drive home?
Yes.
If the house is on my right, mm-hmm, and you're driving, are you in the passenger seat closest to the house or furthest away?
Passenger seat closest.
So you're driving, if you look at a picture of the house,
mm-hmm,
you would be driving from right to left?
Yes.
Okay. So as you start to drive or your husband starts to drive the car, what direction are you looking in, if you remember?
The back seat.
Did you drive by the front of the house, do you know?
We pulled out of the driveway and went up Chapman.
Okay. And your husband and you passed by the front of the house?
Yes.
Did you pass by the flagpole?
Yes.
Were you looking at the flagpole?
No.
And how dark was it at that point?
It was dark.
Snow?
Yes.
As you're passing the flagpole, do you hear or see anything remarkable?
No, I'm not really paying attention. I'm just chatting to the girls, and Matt's just focusing on driving.
When you're talking to the girls and they're making fun of you, what's the mood in the car?
We're all laughing and joking.
Where do you go next?
We drive Julie Nagel home.
After you drop off Miss Nagel, where do you go?
We drop off Sarah Levinson.
Is the weather constant?
Yes.
After you drop off the young woman in separate spots, where do you go?
We went home.
Can you tell us when you get home what happens next?
We go in the house, I go up to bed, Matt makes himself a snack, and then joins me upstairs.
Do you have a telephone?
Yes.
An iPhone?
Yes.
When you go to bed, do you stay up at all?
Yes.
Do you use your iPhone?
Yes, I do.
What were you doing?
I texted a few people, and then I did a couple of Google searches.
And what were the searches for?
One, my daughter had played in a basketball game earlier in the night, and it was a very good game, so I went and I read the report on it. And then my other daughter had an offer to play on a basketball team, so we had to make a decision about whether or not we were going to accept the spot, so I was just looking up that basketball club.
Other than those regular searches that one would do, was there anything remarkable about what you were searching at 2:27 that time frame?
No.
After you were looking at websites for your child's sports, what did you do?
I put my phone down and went to sleep.
And up to that point, had there been any discord or fighting or arguments in your world?
No.
Peaceful night?
Yes.
Did you go to sleep, Ms. McKay?
Yes.
Did you sleep through the night?
I typically get up to go to the bathroom, so that I could have gotten up possibly to go to the bathroom.
Did anything remarkable happen in the early morning hours of January 29, 2022 that changed that peaceful mood into something else?
Yes.
Okay. I want you to share with the jury the first thing that happens that changes everything.
At 4:53, my phone rings and I look at my caller ID. I look at the phone and it's Kaylee. John's niece. And I say hello, and she said, yeah, well, basically she relayed to me that,
Next question.
When you pick up the phone, could you hear a voice on the other end?
I heard a voice and a lot of screaming.
And the voice you heard, is that Kaylee, John's niece?
Yes.
And the screaming, was it a man or a woman screaming?
It was a woman.
How loud was that person screaming?
Very loud.
Could you make out anything that person was saying as they were screaming?
My name was screamed a lot. And then the other individual ended up getting on the phone with me.
Okay. And who was that person that was screaming in the background?
Miss Reed.
How long was she screaming for while you were speaking to your niece before you spoke to her?
The entire time I was speaking to Kaylee, she was screaming.
Describe her demeanor.
Miss Reed's?
Yes.
Jen! Jen! And then she's screaming that John didn't come home. She left him at the waterfall. She was hysterical. It was very hard to follow what she was saying.
How long did that first call last for?
I'm not sure how long, maybe possibly a few minutes, but it was loud enough and long enough that my husband shot up in bed thinking one of my kids had come in the room screaming.
Without saying what your niece said, could you describe your niece's demeanor when you first spoke to her? I mean, John's niece's demeanor.
I would say Kaylee sounded concerned, uneasy.
During that phone call, other than the screaming and the screaming of your name, did the defendant give you any information other than she had dropped John off at the waterfall?
They had gotten into a fight. She had left him there, and he didn't come home.
And when you were woken up, were you in a sleep when you were woken up?
Yes, I was sound asleep.
What was your mental state like when you first woke up and got that call?
Well, I had been up late. I had taken my medication that I take for my MS, so I was definitely a bit groggy when I first woke up. So immediately I just wanted to help her. She was hysterical. Kaylee was upset. So I went into that kind of mom mode of what can I do? How can I help? So I immediately was like thinking, okay, well, if you left him at the waterfall, let me think who was still there, or, you know, how can I help you? How can we find John?
Did you have a plan when you ended that first call?
I did. I knew Chris Albert had still been at the waterfall when I left. So I thought if Karen and John had gotten into a fight, maybe Chris had walked out of the bar and Chris lived local to the bar, thought maybe they walked back to Chris's together.
So what did you do?
So I called Chris Albert's wife, Julie.
Did you speak to her?
No, she never answered.
After you had a moment to make a phone call and think about things, did your head become any more clear?
It did, and I was, reminded by my husband that we had seen Karen in John's car outside of Fairview.
When he reminded you, did you independently remember the text messages that you sent to John earlier that evening?
Immediately. I was like, oh my God, you're right.
Did you remember that you had seen what you believed to be the defendant's car in front of the house and near the flagpole?
Objection, Your
Honor. Watch the form.
Okay. What did you remember? What came to mind after you spoke to your husband about your memory from earlier that evening?
The minute he said it, I remember seeing the SUV and then all the text messages that I had and the phone conversation with John.
So after the defendant spoke to you and said she had left the defendant at the waterfall and you had time to think about your memories, did you react or do anything with that?
Yes, I believe I called Kaylee back.
Why did you call Kaylee?
I didn't have Miss Reed's phone number.
When you called Kaylee back, did you speak to anybody?
Yes, I believe Kaylee and then Miss Reed.
When you first spoke to Kaylee, could you hear anything other than Kaylee?
The screaming.
Was it any different or was it similar to the first time you spoke by phone?
Similar to the first time.
Regarding the demeanor or intensity, had it changed at all?
Not at all.
You mentioned the first time that you had that phone call, the defendant was screaming your name. Jen,
yes.
Jen, Jen. Was she saying your name in the second call, or was it just general screaming?
My name. And then when she got on the phone, I had told her, Karen, I saw you guys outside of my sister's house. And then she told me she didn't remember being there. And then she went on to say, she started saying, could I have hit him? Did I hit him? And then she just was just all over the place, like screaming my name, screaming so many different things. She was hard to follow or understand.
When she was saying to you, did I hit him? Could have I hit him? Was that before or after you informed her that you had seen her out front of your sister's house?
It was after I told her that. She also informed me that she had cracked her taillight.
In that conversation, she told you that?
In one of the conversations I had with her in my bedroom, yes.
Okay. When you told her that you had seen her out front, and mm-hmm. she had said that she didn't remember that night, was that before or after she was saying, did I hit him, could have I hit him?
Can you repeat the question? Sorry.
So she was telling you about that she didn't remember that night.
Mm-hmm.
Was that before or after you had told her about seeing her car?
When I said I saw her at Fairview, then her response was she didn't even remember going there.
Okay. Did she ever deny that she came to Mr. O'Keefe's house? I mean, to your sister's house?
No.
When she told you or said to you, did I hit him or could have I hit him or something like that, did you have any idea what she was talking about?
No, I didn't pay attention to it.
When she told you that she had cracked her taillight the night before, did that have any significance at that time to you?
No.
So in telling you these different things, did you ever piece them together at that time?
No.
What was your primary motivation at that point?
I just wanted to help her because she was hysterical. Kaylee was very upset, so I wanted to help her, and I wanted to find John.
So after she told you these things about whether she could or did hit her and the light and not remembering, did the conversation end or did it progress?
At some point, I was then going into like, okay, well, if she brought him there and left him there, where was he? Because he never came in the house and she doesn't know where he is. So now where could he be? So I started thinking, there was another gentleman that was supposed to meet us out at the bar who John was friends with. So I thought, okay, well, in my head, I'm thinking maybe they got into a fight. John got out of the car and he connected with this guy because he was at a party on the street.
What was that person's name?
His name is Tom Beattie.
Did you call him?
Yes.
Did you get a chance to speak to him that night?
That morning?
Yes.
No.
Did you call around anywhere else?
I believe I called my sister. I called John. I called Tom Beattie. I called his daughter.
You called John O'Keefe's phone?
Yes.
Did he answer?
No.
Did it go right to voicemail?
I don't remember.
Did you text anybody?
I honestly don't remember if okay. I texted. I primarily think I was just trying to call as many people as I could and try to figure out what happened.
So you had two conversations at this point with the defendant while mm-hmm. you were still home?
Yes.
Was there any further phone calls that you had before you did something?
I'm not sure if she... I know I went downstairs to make coffee because my plan was to go with my husband. I said, come on, let's just go over to Tom Beattie's. Let's see. Maybe John's there. He passed out on the couch. I'm not sure if Karen called me again or not. It's a little foggy because there was so many calls and everything. Okay.
And so that morning when you're receiving calls, did something happen?
Karen showed up at my house.
How did you know Karen showed up at your house?
I could hear her screaming out front.
And about what time is this?
Approximately 5:20, 5:30. I can't be sure.
Were you worried for John at this point?
Not particularly, no.
Were you screaming?
No.
Now, at this point, this moment when you hear her outside of your house yelling, early morning hours, mm-hmm. Did you know a person by the name of Kerry Roberts?
I knew of her. I'd met her once.
Were you friends with her at that time?
No.
Had you socialized with her at that time?
No.
Had you ever seen her before with John?
Once.
Tell me about that.
Years earlier, as I said earlier, I used to take Kaylee on Friday nights, and Kerry was the one who would take Patrick on Friday night. So we would each have the kids. And to thank us, one day John told us how he got a discount at Reebok and to get our kids' shoe sizes, and he was going to buy us all sneakers, just as a way to say thank you for helping. So we all went to the store together, and then John took Kerry and myself to the Hillside for lunch.
How many years before this moment was that?
Oh, gosh. Well, I think that's when my daughter was in kindergarten or first grade, and at this point she was in eighth grade, so... like 7 years.
Had you ever spent any other time with Kerry Roberts before this morning?
No.
Were you friends at that point?
No.
How would you consider your relationship with Miss Roberts on that morning when Miss Reed arrived to your home?
I had met her once, and that was the extent of it. I wouldn't say I knew her at all beyond that one time I went out with her.
Okay, I want you to take us back now to when you first hear the defendant in your driveway yelling. When you hear that, do you hear any words, or is it general yelling?
So I hear yelling. So I was downstairs making coffee. I go to my front door and I open it, and she's screaming, "Jen, Jen!" She's screaming that three times, and then she was saying, "We have to go to Fairview." You know, a lot of the "Could I have hit him? Did I hit him?" She was on repeat.
What did you do?
My husband came running down the hall and was like, tell her to shut up. She's going to wake up the neighbors. And then I said, I'm just going to go with her. I'm going to go look for John. And then he yelled down saying something like, you can't be driving around in this weather, you know, with a broken taillight.
When you saw the defendant at your front door, had the weather changed overnight?
Yes.
Was it different?
Yes. Now the snow had intensified. It was almost like it was dark outside, but it was like whiteout conditions.
How dark?
Dark. I mean, it was dark. It was like 5:30 in the morning.
What was the visibility like?
Not good.
After you meet the defendant at your door, do you let her in or does she stay outside?
I'm not sure if I just grabbed my coffee and ran out.
Where did
or
you go?
Whether she came in. So we went down my walkway. She was just kind of running all around. The driver's door was open, so I told her I was going to drive because I thought she was too hysterical to drive. In the meantime, all of a sudden there was a car at the end of my street and there was a plow behind it.
The car that came to the end of your street, do you know where it went?
I meant the end of my driveway, I'm sorry.
When you say the end of your driveway, did it pull into your driveway?
No, it just kind of stopped right at the base of my driveway.
Okay. How far behind your car was that car?
Not far, because not too far.
Okay. Did you know who was in that car?
No.
Did you learn who was in that car?
Yes.
How did you learn who was in the car?
Because I said, who is that?
Did you ask the defendant or did you walk up?
I asked the defendant, okay. And she told me it was Carrie Roberts.
Did you meet Carrie Roberts face-to-face in your driveway that morning?
Yes, I wouldn't say we met. It was more of a, the plow was coming, so then she was having to, like, move down the street, and then either Karen called her or she called Karen, but they were on the phone, Karen's phone, over the car, so they started talking.
Did you get into the defendant's car?
Yes, we did. I got in the car with Miss Reed.
When you got in the car, you were in the driver's seat. Was Miss Reed in the passenger front?
Yes.
You said there was an open call. Is this something you could hear on a speaker?
Yes.
At that point, had you had a chance to go and look at the taillight of that car?
No.
Did you have any interest in the taillight at that point?
No.
There was an open call between who?
Karen and Carrie Roberts.
Can you describe what you heard in that call?
Karen was saying that she wanted to go to Fairview, and Carrie Roberts was instructing her that, no, we weren't going to be going to Fairview, and she kept saying, we got to go to your sister's house, and Carrie Roberts said, no, we're not going to be driving around in this weather in two cars. Let's go back to John's. Let's go to Meadows. Let's go see if he's there. That was kind of the conversation, and then Karen was doing a lot of screaming, and Carrie was kind of yelling back at her to shut up.
Who was taking charge of the situation that morning?
Carrie Roberts.
Were you in charge of it?
No.
Did you weigh in or make any decisions on where you were going to go next, or were you just a listener?
I just listened. Carrie said that Carrie's kind of a take-charge person. She said, we're going to Meadows, so I said, okay, I drove to Meadows.
Now, at this point, you didn't know Carrie Roberts other than that meeting?
Yes, correct.
And you agreed to follow her?
Yes.
So tell us what happens. Take us through the drive.
She might have followed me. I'm not sure. But we drove back to Meadows, pulled into the driveway.
So you knew where Meadows was? You had been there many times for the kids?
Yes.
You think Miss Roberts may have followed you?
Yes.
What was the weather conditions as you were driving?
They were awful. It was, I was driving very slow, cautiously. It was dark. It was hard to see. It was that type where the snow is like coming at your window.
How long of a ride was it from your home to John's home?
Approximately 5-6 minutes.
Was there any other phone calls while you were in the car with Miss Roberts, or did the phone calls end?
I believe that was it.
Can you describe the defendant's demeanor on the trip from your house to John's house?
She was just screaming, yelling things. It was almost like everything she said three times. And she just went from one thing to the next. She was quite hysterical.
Do you remember what she was yelling about?
about going to Fairview, asking, could she have hit him? Did I hit him?
How many times did she raise the question, did I hit him? Could have I hit him?
A good amount.
Did you ever speak to her about that?
No.
At some point, did you finally get to John's home?
Yes.
When you got to John's home, who pulled in the driveway first?
I did.
Where did you pull in respect to the driveway?
I just pulled straight in next to the garage.
Did you see where Miss Roberts went?
I believe she pulled in behind me.
After you pulled into Meadows, John's home, and you stopped, what happened next?
We go into John's house.
You went into John's house, did you all go in the same way?
Yes, we went through the garage.
And before going into John's home, did you do anything?
Before entering into the house?
Yes.
I took off my shoes.
You took off your shoes?
Yes.
Why did you do that?
Because you always had to take your shoes off at John's. He didn't want you to track. He would have yelled at me for tracking snow in his house.
Did you see if Carrie took her shoes off or not?
I believe she did.
Did you see whether the defendant took her shoes off or not?
She just walked right in.
How would you remember that?
Because I thought it was strange.
What was your purpose when you went into the house? What was the number one thing that you were worried about?
We were looking for John.
Anything else on your mind when you went into his house?
Also, I knew Kaylee was there.
Now, at this point, did you have a close relationship with Kaylee?
Yes.
Do you still?
Yes.
What did you do when you went in the house? Where did you go?
I walked through the kitchen, and then I kind of peeked into the TV room. I walked through the dining room, and then before I went up the stairs, I kind of peeked into a living room. I went up to the top of the stairs. I peeked into John's room, and then I went into Kaylee's room.
Did you ever see John?
No.
Why did you go to Kaylee's room?
Because I wanted to go check on Kaylee.
Did you have a chance to speak to her?
I did, yes.
Okay. What was her demeanor at that point?
She was very... She was in the bed. She was holding on to her phone. She was terrified.
Was she screaming?
No.
Did you provide her any comfort?
Yes. I told her that I was going to go out. I told Kaylee that I was going to go out with them and I was going to find John. And I promised her that everything would be okay.
At some point, you left Kaylee?
Yes.
Where did you go?
I went back downstairs, and then we went out to look for John.
Before you left John's house that morning, did the defendant show you anything?
Yes. When we were out in the driveway, I had thought it was when we went in, but I think it might have been when we came out. But regardless, at one point when we were in the driveway at Meadows, Karen showed myself and Kerry Roberts the cracked taillight.
Did you or Miss Roberts get close to the taillight at that point?
Yes, we walked over and the taillight was missing pieces.
Did Ms. Roberts have any comment about it?
Yes, Ms. Roberts.
So she had a comment, next question. Okay.
What was Ms. Roberts' demeanor at that point?
She was frustrated with Karen, had said that. You know, had said that Karen basically was telling her to shut up. You were so drunk, you could have hit anything last night. And then Carrie, I remember just thinking, all right, let's go. And I remember Carrie thinking, oh,
well,
someone's going to get...
Let me ask you what Carrie...
Oh, sorry.
We don't want to think what somebody thought.
Okay.
I want to know what you heard and what you saw.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Yeah.
All right. At some point when you were looking at the taillight with missing pieces with the defendant and Miss Roberts, did you see Miss Roberts point anything out?
Yes.
Share that with us.
She pointed a piece that was sticking out and was concerned that someone was going to catch their coat or something on it.
And during that time when the defendant is showing you the taillight with missing pieces, was she saying anything about it?
No, I don't. Not that I can recall right now.
You mentioned at some point she was saying, did I or could I have hit him after you left John's house? Was that in the car or before you got in the car?
I know for a fact it was definitely in the car. It was one of the times, yes.
Now, Ms. Roberts' car is parked behind the defendant's car in John's driveway.
Yes.
Was there a decision made to take one or two cars?
One car.
What was the plan?
The plan was to get into Carrie's car and to go and look for John. I wanted to go, thinking, let's go to Tom Beattie's, but Ms. Reed was pretty adamant that we go to Fairview first.
You said that at times there was some arguing or bickering, or Ms. Roberts was raising her voice to the defendant?
Yes.
Who made the decision to go to Fairview?
Ultimately, Carrie said, all right, we'll go there, almost like to shut her up.
When you got into the car, where was everybody? When you got into Carrie Roberts's car, where was everybody sitting?
Carrie was driving. I was in the front and passenger. Karen was in the back, in the middle, kind of peeking her head through between us.
I want you to take us through the ride from John's house at Meadows until you first get to Fairview. So as you pull out of, or Carrie Roberts pulls out of John's driveway, what is the mood inside that car?
I'd say it was starting to get tense because Karen was just continuously screaming. Carrie was trying to focus on driving, and Karen's behavior in the back of the car was a bit erratic.
When you say erratic, can you just give some detail what you mean by that?
Yes, she would go from sitting back to leaning up in between us, and she would yell Carrie's name three times. Then she would yell my name three times. And then she would yell, could I hit him? Did I hit him? Over and over again.
When she was repeating these questions or phrases that she was yelling, did you respond in any way?
I don't believe I did, no.
How about Carrie?
Carrie was telling her to shut up and to buckle up.
Was she buckled?
I don't believe so.
You began your drive from Mr. O'Keefe's home at Meadows to Fairview. Is the weather getting better?
No, it's getting worse.
Is the visibility still difficult?
It was terrible.
As you began that drive to Fairview, was there anything that you were doing on the way?
Yes, I was just kind of looking out the window intently to see if I saw anything.
What were you looking for?
I guess John, which I know it sounds crazy, but I didn't know where the hell he was.
Did you have any difficulty seeing from the car the side of the road?
Yes.
Did you see what direction Ms. Roberts was looking when she was driving?
It was hard because she needed to focus on driving because the conditions were that bad.
Did you have a chance to see the defendant on that drive at all?
Yes.
Was she looking out the windows with you?
No, she was popping back and forth and screaming.
Was it constant screaming or did it change at all?
She would scream and then kind of sit back and she'd almost be like quiet for a minute. It was like, okay, good. And then she'd start again.
In those quiet times, do you know what, if anything, she was doing?
I didn't know what she was doing that morning, no.
How long did it take to get to Fairview?
I don't know. I'm going to assume maybe 10 minutes, like with the weather, maybe 10 minutes. I'm not, give or take, approximately.
As you're approaching 34 Fairview Road, before you get there, is Fairview going to be on your left side, driver's side, or on the right side?
As we're pulling up, it's on the driver's side. Carrie's going to take a left down Fairview off of Chapman.
I want you to take us back to that morning, about 20 or 30 yards before you get to Fairview.
Mm-hmm.
You're in the car with Ms. Roberts and the defendant?
Yes.
What's happening in the car?
Karen is screaming, and at that point she had asked if John could be cheating on her and if John could be with Bella's mom.
And then what happens?
Didn't know what the hell she was talking about. I was like, what are you talking about? Why would he be with Bella's mom? And then Carrie said, well, do you think he could have walked to, there was another woman years before that John had dated who lived on the next street over to her house. Okay.
And as you approach that area before you get to the flagpole, does anything remarkable happen?
No.
Okay. What happens next?
As we're driving down the street, I just say to Carrie, because she doesn't know where my sister lives, oh, her house is just at the bottom of the street.
Visibility still difficult?
Yes, awful.
What happens next?
We continue, you know, driving, and we're driving slowly past, the line of, I guess, bushes and the flagpole area. And all of a sudden, Karen's screaming from the back, there he is, or something to the effect of, there he is, let me out.
Did you know what she was talking about?
I had no idea.
When she was yelling that, did you look out the window?
Yeah, we had our eyes peeled out the window.
Did you see anything?
Nothing but snow.
How long was she yelling about whatever it is she was saying?
She screamed, stop. So Carrie stopped pretty quickly. There he is, there he is. She could have kicked the door, like, let me out of here.
And when she was kicking the door, what were you doing?
I was just like, what the heck, what is going on?
What happens next?
She gets out. Carrie looks at me and said, like, she's batshit crazy.
Then what happens?
Then Carrie got out. Then I got out of the car, walked around the back of the car, and was walking like over to where I could see the girls were.
Now, at that point, you were in Kerry Roberts' car.
Yes.
It had his headlights on.
Yes.
Was it facing up the street of Fairview?
Well, we had come down the hill, so yes, up the street.
There was no other lighting in that area?
I do not believe so.
No fire engines or ambulances at that point?
No.
No police cars?
No.
Any street lights?
It was dark.
When you got out of the car, did you look towards the area of the flagpole?
Yes.
Could you see anything at that point?
No.
How close did you get to the area of the flagpole before you could first actually see something?
Well, I saw the shadowy figures of Carrie and Karen, and it wasn't until I got very close over to them that I saw Carrie removing the snow from John's face.
Is that the first moment you realized that was John O'Keefe on the ground?
Yes, it was.
When you see Carrie removing the snow from John's face, what do you do?
I was frozen. I was shocked. I couldn't believe that was him just lying there.
Tell us what you're seeing.
What do I see? I see Carrie just wiping the snow off. Karen had straddled him and had lifted her shirt and his shirt and was laying on him, and Carrie was screaming at her to get off of him. And I was literally just stunned. I mean, there he was.
What did John look like when you saw him?
I couldn't see much but his face, because the rest I could was snow and Karen was moving over him, but he just looked like frozen.
What did you do?
At first, I just stood there for a minute because I couldn't believe it was him. And then Carrie Roberts and I made eye contact, and I like knew, I was like, all right, I'm going to call 911. But I think I knew in that moment that John, you know, was dead.
Did you call 911?
Yeah, I started to call 911, and Carrie and Karen were just screaming. And, so I walked back towards, Carrie's car, and then Carrie was also yelling at me to go to the back of the car to look for blankets and towels. So as I was calling 9, 911. I was at the back of the car looking for the towels and the blankets to bring over to Kerry. And while I was doing that, I believe 911 answered.
Did you speak to 911?
I did, yes.
Did you get the towels and blankets that Kerry had requested?
I did, yes.
After your phone call with 911 and you had the towels and blankets, tell us what happens next.
So after I called 911, I went back over to Kerry, Karen, and John. And at that point, Kerry asked if I would take over compressions. So she got up and I started doing compressions, and Karen was doing mouth to mouth.
When you started doing compressions, were you touching John over his clothes or touching his skin?
I don't remember.
Did you at that point get a chance to touch John's body and see how it felt temperature-wise?
I just remember when I was doing the compressions, it just, I don't really know how to explain it. It just felt very funny.
I'm sorry, very what?
It just wasn't like normal.
What?
I don't. I can't think of how to describe the way it felt when I was trying to press down, but it was like resistance.
How long did you try to give compressions and give aid to John for?
Until the police came.
Mr. Brennan, why don't we end here?
Thank you.
All right, Ms. McKay, we're going to need you back tomorrow. Okay. Okay. Jurors, that's it for today. I have to give you those same cautions. Please do not discuss this case with anyone. Don't do any independent research or investigation into this case. If you happen to see, hear, or read anything about this case, please disregard it and let us know. And again, please be very careful with your social media.
All right, we'll see
you tomorrow morning. Please, right to sleep. Please leave your
notes on the chair. Goodbye.
Could we close the doors, please?
May be seated.
So I know it's shifting gears, but I want to address, I said I'd hear you today on the argument on the ARCA motion. Mr. Brennan, do you need a minute, or can you argue that?
I'm sorry, Your Honor, I was looking at my notebook. What issue would you like to address?
Your motion yesterday. We had the motion, and I told you that I would hear you on argument, and it's very brief. 10 minutes, please.
Your Honor, before we begin, my client needed to use the restroom.
Oh, I didn't notice she wasn't here.
Yes, okay. If you could just have 5 minutes, she'll be right back.
Sure. All right,
thank
5 minutes.
All right, please. Back in session,
you may be seated. All right, Mr. Brennan, I'll hear you.
Your Honor, in light of yesterday's hearing with the ARCA witnesses, the Commonwealth is going to ask the court to preclude the ARCA witnesses from testifying both about any new testing and any new opinions, and secondly, from testifying about their original opinions turned over in a report prior to last year's trial. To be brief, what we learned or confirmed is that we do not have all of the discovery or communications. There was a court order for the ARCA witnesses to provide Your Honor with all of their information, phone records, text messages, communications about this case. Instead of providing their information to the court, they instead chose to send it to the defense, and then it was summarized and provided by the defense to the court and to the Commonwealth. It appears to me that is not in compliance with the court's order. What we learned during the hearing yesterday is that Dr. Wolf admittedly destroyed over 100 text messages. Now, he mentioned that he changed phone carriers, but then later admitted that he actually intentionally, for no apparent reason, destroyed the text messages in this case. And so what is left for Your Honor to look at is a summary of phone records from the defense in Archer's information that is passed through the defense to the court. You do not have the text messages. You do not have the content of the text messages. There is no summary of the conversations, dozens and dozens of calls between the defense and the experts. It is difficult to believe that all of those text messages and all of those phone conversations dealt with simply logistics. In fact, we later learn during the questioning of Dr. Rentschler, there is much more involved than simply logistics. But to get back to Dr. Wolf, he did not disclose to the court that he was communicating and having conversations on Signal. How odd, an expert using Signal. Never used it before. Dr. Rentschler said, would not use Signal, never use Signal. But Signal, as we know, is an application that does not create a record of communications. Dr. Wolf maintained on his direct that everything he did was logistics, even when we showed him the direct examinations with comments that asked for input from the defense to questions in a way that would be advantageous to the defense and to thwart the Commonwealth. Dr. Wolf actually still continued to testify that that was simply procedure and logistics, never admitting the fact that there was, in fact, conversations or information exchanged about bettering the presentation for the defense. Inevitably, I asked him about the sequestration order and how evasive he was. You simply have to compare him to Dr. Rentschler, who was quite candid. An hour or 45 minutes with Dr. Wolf, difficult getting a straight answer. Dr. Rentschler told us more in 5 minutes than Dr. Wolf told us his entire examination. And what we unfortunately learned is that during the trial, when this court had a sequestration order, information was being passed to the experts about witness testimony, in this case, unknown to the Commonwealth, unknown to the court, information, particular information, not general information, witness testimony, issues in the case. We have no idea who is deciding or identifying the issues and who the advantage is given to in describing those issues. But that is witnesses being prepped through an intermediary. So we know the Department of Justice, at least, is violating the order, helping the witnesses along, and then they testify, unbeknownst to the Commonwealth, that they have this information, but obviously is reflected in the testimony. In addition, I've provided some clips to Your Honor for review.
Yes, do you want me to mark these as an exhibit?
I do.
Okay, so this was an exhibit from yesterday. I did have the opportunity to look at them.
I suggest that the relationship was not resigned to mere logistics. And so from that subterfuge, what we stand with today is that we know that the witnesses were well prepared. We know that there was not true independence. And what we know is that they are refusing to provide the necessary information to support their original opinions that they gave at the first trial. They cited that it was a protective order. Perhaps it is. That has nothing to do with the issue. By calling the ARCA witnesses as their witnesses, they then have the obligation to comply with Rule 14. Unlike the first trial, where the Commonwealth had no ability to do any testing, review, vet the reliability of the information, properly prepare for cross-examination, this trial, that should not occur. Just because it happened last trial and the Commonwealth was disadvantaged does not mean it should happen this trial. And that is precisely why I began moving for discovery in this case early on. Inevitably, if these witnesses cannot provide information because it's under a protective order, it may not be the defendant's fault in its inception, but it is their problem and difficulty because they chose to hire the ARCA witnesses. They could have chosen any witnesses they want. Rule 14 is not obviated because they made a strategic decision to call the ARCA witnesses. So now going into this trial, even Dr. Rentschler admitted that an expert should have time, in their opinion, a month or more, to review the raw materials. It's not enough simply to have a report, as Attorney Alisi preached during his argument. We should have the opportunity to go through the raw data, the history, the videos, determine whether there's any failed testing. We don't have that benefit. And so my position has changed, that those early opinions should not come in because we have no ability to fairly cross-examine. As for the new opinions, the report may not be done till May 7th. We are in the middle of trial. concedingly by the defense, or at least their witnesses, it takes a month to go through the discovery. When I filed my motion on the eve of trial that we would be unable to prepare or we would want a continuance in this case, I appreciate why this case wasn't continued, but I knew, given our scheduling, our experts will not be able to look at this material. Our expert is away until after the first week of May. He is going to be testifying shortly after. He will have no ability to digest this enormous amount of materials, vet whether it's accurate or not, conduct tests to combat it if he thinks that it's inaccurate or unfair. And so the discovery violations, regardless of the state of mind, are upon the defendant. There is no exception that you used ARCA witnesses. There is no exception that you hired somebody that used to be under a federal protective order. They chose them, and I would suggest it seems strategically. When we noticed we'd have new experts in October, the defense from past experience, and probably other experience, but we know from this case, knows the process. They would have to file a TUI letter and wait for a response. And yet, they waited until February to seek permission, which then extended their permission past February into March, and then they didn't even start the review until late March. And so it's fundamentally unfair. We should not be placed in the position of cross-examining experts without the fair ability, as any participant, defendant, Commonwealth, any participant would have in a case, to consider and then to rebut. And so for that reason, I ask you to exclude both the new opinions and new testing, and also to exclude the earlier opinions that we will never, at this point, receive the proper discovery with to prepare.
All right, thank you. Mr. Lassie, I only have one question for you. So would you stand, please? You're arguing this, right? This was your motion. So my question is, how do I reconcile the fact that 100 text messages were deleted by counsel? And we heard yesterday counsel's preferred method of dealing with Dr. Wolf was via Signal. How do we reconcile that with the Massachusetts Rules of Professional Conduct 1.15? I don't see how you reconcile that, where all correspondence related to the matter, whether in physical or electronic form, must be saved for 10 years minimum. How do you reconcile that? How do I reconcile that?
Should I go to the podium?
Right there, and I expect a short answer.
The short answer, Your Honor, is the rule that you're citing has absolutely no applicability to this proceeding. Can I finish my answer, Your Honor?
Right ahead.
Has no applicability. That rule is intended to be between an attorney and the client. The court has no jurisdiction to enforce that rule.
I agree. That's a different body. But I'm asking you how I reconcile that when I'm trying to figure this out. Mr. Lassie, you know what? You're going to win this, so why don't you just let me make my ruling, okay? So I understand there have been repeated violations of the reciprocal discovery orders and my orders, repeated and deliberate. But, and Mr. Brennan, I understand completely the Commonwealth's argument, completely the ambush that has been set upon here. However, a defendant's right to a fair trial is paramount to everything. So I'm going to allow the ARCA witnesses to testify. I am going to allow what I expect to be a very robust cross-examination. And I'm going to allow them to testify to everything that they said up until yesterday. So you'll get the report May 7th. And I know that's late. And if you need anything as a result of that being late, I'll hear you on whatever motion you have. But that's where we stand. And I expect counsel to comply with all rulings and rules of the court and all rules of professional conduct. And no more nonsense. Let's just try this case. All right, that's it. I'll see you tomorrow.
All rise to the court, please.
There's more live courtroom coverage coming up. Press subscribe now so you don't miss a second. From the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
Extra value meals are back. That means 10 tender juicy McNuggets and medium fries and a drink are just $8. Only at McDonald's.
For limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher in Hawaii, Alaska, and California and for delivery.